When you were a little kid,
ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. Today is October 24th, 2015. I am Matt Beatros, your host, and we're going to be live here for the next 58 minutes. And as always, it's a pleasure. I get excited when I know I'm coming on air to talk to everybody out there. We've got lots of stuff going on, and I can't wait to talk to you about it. Actually, I do want to make a comment. I was on earlier this morning on the Ed Laughlin Show, Law Talk, and I just wanted to say thanks again to Ed for trusting me and allowing me to come on to the program and guest host for him for the last hour of the show. We had a good time, talked about some good things. Today is the 24th of October. It's UN Day, so we talked a little bit about the UN. But we're not going to talk about that today. What we're going to do, I'm going to give you some highlights of today's show as to what's coming up. And today's CHL segment, because I am a concealed carry instructor for the state of Texas, but we're going to be going over the places that a licensed concealed carry holder cannot go. And we're going to simplify it to make it easy. Everybody wants to make it confusing, complex, but in reality, it's very easy. And we're going to show you how to do that. Again, we're going to read from the American Rifleman, three stories about armed citizens defending themselves with guns. My PEP section will be talking about the criminal mind and how it differs from a normal person's mind. I think that's going to be very interesting. I was reading and doing homework on that, and it was very interesting. Today's product spotlight will be from Sentex Tactical Gear concerning different ammo pouches for different calibers. And John Ferguson, my friend John Ferguson from Blackjack Firearms, will be in the studio. He's here right now. We're going to be talking about different calibers for the AR platform and their benefits. And finally, hopefully, I've been trying to do this for the last 2 weeks now, my gun demo will go over saddling the slide of an automatic pistol when reloading. Also, if time permits, I'll do a Whiskey Tango Foxtrot moment. Everybody seems to like those. They're a lot of fun. But now, the clock is ticking, and we've got lots to go over. So I'm going to go right into our CHL segment, and we're going to talk about the places that you can't go. I want to reiterate to everybody that I am a certified instructor for the state of Texas to teach concealed carry. Been doing it for quite a long time now, and I've taught, oh gosh, thousands of people now. And I've got many tricks up my sleeves. I don't give out fluff because fluff will get you killed. We've got it down to a Nats fanny. We really know what we're doing. And today, later today, there's still time to go if you like. We have a class today at Aaron's Gun Shop in Cameron. It's at 2:30. $60 for the course. It's a five-hour class. You'll be out of there by about 7:30. And that's your CHL certificate to show you took the class so you can do the rest of the information that goes on the state side of the application and get your license. So we'll talk about that too. But now, let's go back to CHL. Everyone asks me, Matt, where can I not go with my concealed weapon? And I tell them it's simple. If you can remember these 10 places, then all you have to do is look for a Penal Code 30-06 sign everywhere else. If there's no sign, you can go in. But what I want to do before I go any further is I might as well let you know and get you informed, if you don't already know, what is Penal Code 30-06 and how does it pertain to a person with a license to carry? So we go to the book here, and I'm going to read to you now section Penal Code 30-06, Criminal Trespass by a License Holder. This section creates an offense if a license holder carries a concealed handgun on the property of another, with notice that either entry on the property by a license holder with a concealed handgun was forbidden, or remaining on the property with a concealed handgun was forbidden and the license holder failed to depart. This section requires oral or written notice by the owner of the property or someone with apparent authority to act for the owner. In order for a license holder to receive written notice, a card, sign, or document must contain the following language. And this is it in bold print. Pursuant to Section 30-6 Penal Code, trespass by a holder of a license to carry a concealed handgun, a person licensed under the authority of Subchapter H, Chapter 411 Government Code, Concealed Handgun Law, may not enter this property with a concealed handgun. If the notice is given by a sign on the property, the sign must be in both English and Spanish, must be in contrasting colors with block letters at least 1 inch in height, and must be displayed in a conspicuous manner, clearly visible to the public. Now, let's go back over this. The key thing is this. If you're able to carry a gun concealed, legally, that means you have a concealed carry license. The state has certain requirements that have to be met for you to get that license. But within the law, they also have certain requirements that tells the private owner that if you don't want a person who is licensed, if you don't want them on your property, you must tell them in a direct manner, an oral manner, or you must have it written down in a document. And if it's written down in some type of form, card, or document, it has to say certain types of language or certain words. And once again, those words are pursuant to Section 30-6 Penal Code, trespass of a holder of a license to carry a concealed handgun, a person licensed under the authority of Subchapter H, Chapter 411 Government Code, Concealed Handgun Law, may not enter this property with a concealed handgun. If you see that sign, both in English and Spanish, in a conspicuously placed manner, at the entry points of any place, you cannot go in there. So, keeping that in mind, let's go back to the question. And the question is, Matt, where can I not go with my concealed weapon? So here's what we're going to do. And I didn't tell you this, Paul. I don't know if you can do this real quick, but I'm going to be doing a top 10. And if you got the ability to get me a drum roll on the last one, that'd be awesome. So I'll see what you can do. Paul, he's an awesome board operator here, and we're going to see if we can get a drum roll for number 10. But we're going to do a little David Letterman here with a top 10 list. So here we go. The CHL segment telling you the 10 places that you cannot go if you have a concealed carry license. Number 10, physical premises of a public or private school or institution. Number 9, grounds where a school-sponsored activity is being or is taking place. Number 8, premises of a polling place on election day or during early voting. Number 7, premises of a government court or offices used by the court unless pursuant to written regulations or authorization of the court. Number 6, premises of a racetrack. Number 5, secured area of an airport. Number 4, on the premises of a business that derives 51% or more of its income from the sale or service of alcoholic beverages for on-premise consumption. Number 3, on the premises where a high school, collegiate, or professional sporting or interscholastic event is taking place. Say interscholastic 5 times fast, but you can't do it. Number 2, within 1,000 feet of premises, the location of which is designated by the Texas Department of Criminal Justice as a place of execution. That'd be Huntsville, right? And, you ready, Paul? The number 1 place not to go with a concealed handgun weapon or not, drum roll, please. Is it going? Any federal building or Fed-owned property like the VA. Ba-dum-bum. So those are the 10 places you can't go. Now, everywhere else that you go, if you can burn those 10 places into your brain, burn them into your brain so you don't have to think about it anymore, then all you have to do is look for a sign. If you know that those 10 places, whether there's a sign up or not, you can't go in, then all you really have to do is look for a sign. Now, I want to go back to number 4 and 5. Secured area of an airport. Let's talk about that. This one's a little tricky because TSA is getting kind of weird. It used to be the secured area of the airport would be what? Guys, what would you say? After the security. You can go into the lobby, you can go buy your tickets, but when you go to that place where they molest you and they put their hands in your pants and all that kind of stuff, you can't have a weapon, right? That's the secured part. But now the way TSA is doing it, from reports that I read, that they got their dogs out in the parking lots and they're checking for stuff, so I never know. So bottom line is, unless you really got to take the gun on the trip that you're going to go, try if possible, stay away from the airport because they're kind of crazy. Now, on the premises of a business that derives 51% or more of its income from the sale or service of alcoholic beverages for on-premise consumption. Ladies and gentlemen, does that mean you cannot go into a liquor store with a concealed weapon? And the answer should be only if they have a sign. Because what number four says here, 51% or more of its income from the sale or service of alcoholic beverages for on-premise consumption. You do not drink alcohol in a liquor store. Or if you do, you're doing it wrong. You shouldn't be doing it there. But 51% or more would be like a bar. You go into a bar, they're serving alcohol, they're making way more than 51%, and you're consuming it on the premise. Okay, so if you buy liquor from a convenience store or beer from a convenience store or liquor from a liquor store, there that's not a 51% location. So you can go in unless one of two things. They post a 30-06 sign, or somebody, the owner or somebody acting for the owner, actually says before you walk in, ladies and gentlemen, whether you have, I don't know if you got a gun or not, but if you're licensed to carry a gun, I'm telling you, I don't want you on the premise. You just got an oral command to stay off the property. Otherwise, you're trespassing. So those are the 10 places you cannot go. We teach all that in the class. We have a class today at 2:30. There's still time to get in it. It's 2:30 in Aaron's Gun Shop in Cameron. If you want to sign up for the class, you can call here in the studio, in which I forgot to give the numbers. The numbers here, if you want to participate in the show today, is 254-773-1400, 254-773-1400. Or you can give us an email at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com, or you can just go directly to the website, aaronsgunshop.com. I was made aware that there's a mistake on the website. The day says Sunday. That's incorrect. It's the 24th today, Saturday. The class is at 2:30. Okay, now, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to move on to the next segment. And the next segment is our NRA, the Armed Citizen. In this section, I'm going to read to you three stories from the NRA's Armed Citizen page of the American Rifleman magazine. And hopefully from these true stories, we can learn what to do and what not to do. Now, if you're not a member of the NRA, you might consider becoming one. The more gun supporters they have, the more muscle they have to stop bad legislation. So I highly recommend if you're not a member, join. You also get your pick of a few different types of magazines. I prefer the American Rifleman. I think there's the American Hunter, and there's another magazine as well. So check them out. Become a member today. The three stories I'm going to read, the first one here is from December 2014. And it reads, Arthur M. Lewis, 89, a decorated World War II veteran, was working at his jewelry business around 3 p.m. when a man with a gun entered the store. Lewis quickly grabbed a 38 handgun he was carrying in his pocket. The would-be robber exchanged gunfire with Lewis before fleeing the scene. He was later found at a local hospital suffering from 6 gunshot wounds. After being treated, the assailant was arrested and now faces charges of armed robbery, felon in possession of a firearm, aggravated battery with a deadly weapon, and armed burglary. Lewis's left arm was grazed by a bullet, but he was otherwise unscathed. Now, I highlighted a couple things in the story. First of all, Lewis quickly grabbed the gun. He knew what to do, how to do it, and he grabbed it. The other thing I highlighted was suffering from 6 gunshot wounds. It's great for Mr. Lewis the way his quick reaction was, but when it concerns me about the robber took 6 shots from a .38 special, and he's still alive. So shot placement's everything. I don't know where the 6 shots went, but I'm thinking if you're hitting 6 shots center mass in the chest, the guy should go down permanently. So this tells us accuracy is very important. Not only is quick response good, but you got to have accuracy to go with it. All right, story number two. This one's from November 2014. Quilton Wood was asleep just before 10 a.m. when he heard the doorbell ring followed by a loud knocking. Wood said he was not expecting any visitors and did not recognize the black Ford Mustang parked in front of his home. So he retrieved his firearm as a precaution. Smart move. When a 25-year-old stranger entered the home, Wood confronted him. Wood claimed the intruder continued toward him despite his warnings. Wood said, all he knows is I'm telling him, get down, stop. It went bad. He kept coming toward me, and he didn't want to stop. Wood fired once, striking the intruder in the chest. Police arrived shortly thereafter, and the suspect was taken to the local hospital. He is reportedly expected to make a full recovery. Wood was not injured during the incident. Ladies and gentlemen, good thing. If you enter my house, as did the intruder, and did not obey my commands, I would have done the same thing. Only I think it would have been permanent. My problem here is, once again, what caliber of gun is he shooting? He gets shot in the chest, and he's going to make a full recovery. So we need to consider types of calibers we're using and shot placement as well. I'm going to read the last story, and let's see what we got here. This is from July 2014. Jeremy Rosetta, 39, was in the stairwell of an apartment building when he got into an argument with two men and a female. One of the men punched Rosetta. According to the police, one of the three then held Rosetta down while another beat him with a baseball bat. Fearing great bodily harm or death, no, you think, Rosetta drew a gun as he is licensed to carry it and fired, killing the two of the three attackers. Now, my commentary is this. Here's why I like the story. You notice that Rosetta did not pull the gun out until he thought it was past the point of no return. And my commentary is, why does an initial argument have to start off with gunfire? The gun stays holstered until the line has been crossed, and only you know what that line is. Once again, to make clear, he gets in an argument, they're fighting, he's packing heat, but it doesn't come out until he thinks his head's going under the bow of the boat, and then he has to use it. My only comment is, we should have tried to avoid the argument to begin with using nonviolent dispute resolution. But anyway, those are your three stories from the NRA. I got a phone call in here. Let me see what we're talking about here. What type of gun do you carry, and why do you prefer that gun and caliber? Okay, this is from Jonathan in Temple. It depends. It depends on the caliber. And I'll tell you why, because it depends on the type of gun that I'm going to carry at the time that I feel I want to carry that particular type of gun. Let me clarify that statement. Depending on how I feel, if I got back problems, or if it's super hot, or it's cold, I can wear heavier clothing, or depending on where I'm going to go, will probably make my decision as to what kind of gun I'm going to carry. But that doesn't bother me, because I understand my weapons. I know what they do, I know how to use them, and I know how to shoot them accurately. And I will only pull them out if the situation arises and I have to do that. So if I'm carrying a 22 Magnum, I know a 22 Magnum is very devastating. It can do a lot of damage to an individual, especially put in the right place. So if I'm carrying a 22 mini revolver, we'll say, I feel quite comfortable that I can handle myself under certain situations. Of course, I've only got 5 rounds, but that little mini revolver is going to get me to my larger gun because I'm very confident with my capabilities. If you are not confident with your capabilities, then of course you might want to try something different. You want a gun that's simple in its operation, maybe with a larger caliber to, if it's one shot, that will incapacitate the individual. More chances of that happening than maybe a smaller caliber. But it all depends on you, your experience, where you're going, how you're dressed, what's the duration, do you have backup equipment in case that one fails, what's your scenario. So a lot of things go into what kind of gun I'm going to carry. But I will make this comment, and that is, I love the North American Arms mini revolvers. I love them because they're well built. They work every time you pull the trigger or cock the hammer and pull the trigger. And they're small and compact. I call them the pocket knife of the gun world because I can have it on me all the time without, one, anybody seeing it. And two, it doesn't feel like I have anything on. It's very comfortable to wear. And if you understand how to use it and use it well, it can get you out of a lot of trouble. So I hopefully that answered your question there, Jonathan. And thanks for the call. What we're going to do right now is we're going to take a quick break, 1 minute break. And when we come back, we're going to go over our PEP section. So we'll see you on the other side in about a minute. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who has been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Bitros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. aaronsgunshop.com. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. I'm Matt, your host, and today again is the 24th of October, 2015, and we're live here. And we just got done with our last section, and we're going into our new one called PEP. Preparation eliminates panic, or practice eliminates panic. Now, a lot of things, ladies and gentlemen, go into preparing. You just don't get water, you just don't get food, you don't get just firearm security. But what about preparing for the mindset of your opponent or the criminal aspect? So being prepared comes in many forms. Most would think, like I said, food, water, fire, shelter, etc. But what about learning the opponent? I'm going to read a quote from the author of the book, The Art of War, Sun Tzu. This is a quote from Sun Tzu. If you know the enemy and know yourself, you need not fear the result of 100 battles. If you know yourself but not the enemy, for every victory gained, you will also suffer a defeat. If you know neither the enemy nor yourself, you're a fool and will succumb in every battle. So with that, let's learn 10 incredible facts about the criminal brain. I was doing my homework and I came upon this and I thought, wow, this is pretty cool. So I'm going to relay it to you. It's a few pages here and I'm just going to read it verbatim. And this comes from the criminaljusticedegreeguide.com. 10 incredible facts about the criminal brain. Whenever a crime happens, the community is left wondering how someone could do such a thing. For most of us, it's hard to comprehend the urge to harm someone else or steal something, especially when we consider the consequences to the victim, their family, and ourselves. But many criminal brains work differently than the average humans. Of course, there are people who turn to crime after a tough childhood, but some criminals, especially psychopaths and those with personality disorders, have minds that are wired for crime. Here are 10 unbelievable facts about the criminal brain. Number one, parts of the brain are deformed. All the parts of your brain work together to make you a complete functioning human being. But for many criminals, some of these parts aren't the same size as they are in the average person, causing them to act differently than the rest of us. Studies have found that two parts of the brain's frontal lobes are significantly smaller in people with antisocial personality disorder, who have the tendency to act violently and become repeat offenders. One of those parts was 18% smaller in an antisocial person compared to a normal people. The other was 9% smaller. The frontal lobe controls our decision-making, emotions, and purposeful behaviors, so criminals may have less authority over those functions. A study of psychopaths also found that a portion of the amygdala, a piece of the brain important for human emotion, had a volume of about 18% less than that you would find in a normal person. That's pretty interesting. Number two, a tumor could be to blame. While the large majority of criminals don't have a brain tumor, some criminals have been found to have a cancer that probably contributed to their unthinkable acts. One of the most notable of these is Charles Whitman, who killed 16 people at the University of Texas in 1966 before being killed by police. He had been experiencing terrible headaches and wrote that he was having many irrational thoughts. In the suicide note he wrote before killing his wife and mother and then going on the rampage, he asked that an autopsy be performed on him to see if there was something in his brain causing him to act this way. And there was. Doctors found a glioblastoma tumor that reasonably could have affected his actions. Number three, chemical levels in the brain are off. Neurotransmitters are chemicals in our brains that deliver signals and cause reactions in us, such as arousal and triggering memory. Research has found that some criminal brains have different levels of neurotransmitters, like serotonin or dopamine, that normal brains have. Serotonin at the proper levels keep people from acting aggressively when they are frustrated. So when someone's brain has lower amounts of the chemical, the person may react impulsively and violently. Dopamine levels affect whenever a person feels rewarded for an action. If dopamine levels increase significantly when someone acts aggressively, he'll feel good about it and likely do it again. Number four, this one I thought was pretty cool. The brain doesn't respond to facial expressions. You'll understand after you hear this. Psychopaths, especially those who commit violent crimes, may not have brains that register fearful expressions on others' faces. In experiments, researchers have found that people with antisocial personality disorder have trouble recognizing faces showing fear and sadness. Antisocial people who fall into the category of psychopath find it significantly more difficult to know when an expression is sad. Psychopaths also have almost no reaction to expressions of fear, while normal persons' brains will become very active when they see scared expressions. This difference may be what keeps psychopaths from feeling remorse, since they don't register that they are causing pain or sadness. That's pretty interesting. Number five, they're fearless. The brain of a psychopath doesn't react with fear as frequently as ours do. In tests of criminal psychopaths, researchers have found that they lack the fear conditioning that causes the rest of us to be afraid when we know something bad is coming. The average person can be conditioned, much like Pavlov's dog, to expect a certain thing when they hear a certain sound. In the case of fear conditioning, many researchers play a certain tune before administering an electric shock. As the brain starts to associate the tune with the shock, the normal response to the tune is anxiety. Psychopaths' brains, however, do not show any change when the song plays. This lack of anxiety over the future and the consequences of their action can make psychopaths very dangerous criminals. Number six, there are warning signs as early as age three. When researchers tested the reactions of a large group of three-year-olds to certain sounds, they expected them to have measurable reaction when they knew the unpleasant noises was coming up. About 8% of the children didn't have any reaction even to the bad or frightening sounds. 20 years after the experiment, researchers found that this 8% had criminal records for crimes ranging in severity from violent to serious driving infractions. Now, this doesn't mean that all children whose brains don't register fear the same as others will be criminals, but it does indicate that they are more likely to act criminally, and steps should be taken to raise them in a way that helps them stay out of trouble. Number seven, the irrational side and irrational side communicate too much. The corpus callosum is the bridge in the brain that connects the rational left side with the irrational right side. In criminal psychopaths, this bundle of fibers is longer and thinner than in the average person. It also seems to have more activity, meaning more communication between the two hemispheres than normal. This seems like it could be a good thing, but while a socially normal person's mind is controlled by the rational side, the increased communication causes psychopaths to be divided between rational and irrational. This often leads to more impulsive behavior since they have difficulty thinking through the consequences of their actions in a wholly rational way. Number eight, they're genetically predisposed to crime. Nature versus nature has always been a huge debate among criminologists, but there is research to support the idea that many criminal brains are genetically prone to aggressive or illegal behavior. Some criminals are a product of their environments, coming from abusive homes or bad neighborhoods, but a large number of murderers were raised in relatively conflict-free households. The deficits in their brains were a trait that were born with and gave them higher likelihood of becoming violent criminals. Now, that's not to say they were forced to commit these crimes, but their brains were more inclined to them than the brains of average humans. It also explains why criminals from loving, wealthy upbringings can commit horrible, violent crimes. Number nine, teens' brains aren't fully formed yet. Though many teenagers can be tried as adults in the majority of the U.S., their brains aren't fully developed yet. Reasoning and judgment are now known to be mature throughout the teen years and into a person's 20s. When compared to adults, teenagers are more impulsive, more susceptible to peer pressure, less likely to look at the long-term consequences of their actions, and less able to think of ways out of bad situations. Aggression also peaks in the teenage years, which means that the violent teen may not be a violent adult. They can actually grow out of it. This is one argument many critics use to prove that the death penalty should never be used for teenagers, since it's likely to be their brains that need further development. Number 10, last one. Smoking while pregnant can lead to children with criminal tendencies. When a mother smokes while pregnant, she may be harming her baby's brain in a way that will make him more likely to become a criminal. Research has shown that the average adult, meaning those who didn't come from moms with mental illness or experienced deprivation, is 31% more likely to have been arrested at some point if their mothers smoked while pregnant. Those with heavy smoking moms are also more likely to be repeat offenders. Now, it seems that the nicotine causes abnormalities in the development of attention and impulse control in the brain. The finding held up for both men and women with mothers who smoked, making it just another reason to add to your list of why smoking is bad for you. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I read that because preparation comes in many forms. I'm prepped because I'm studying the mind of the one who's trying to hurt me. If I can understand that person's mind and how it works, I might be able to do things to avoid the conflict. Okay, I got another call. It asked me, this is concerning carrying, is it legal to carry a gun in public parks or Corps of Engineer property? This is the sign. There is a sign, but it's not a 30-06 sign. That's a good question. I was talking to that with C.J. Grisham. And basically, the Corps of Engineers pertain to the buildings themselves. If the land is not federal land, you should be able to go on the land with a concealed weapon. And since the Penal Code 30-06 sign is not posted, it doesn't properly keep somebody who's licensed to carry out. Public parks, state parks, you can go in. It's not a problem at all unless they tape off an area or something for a special event and they have entry points and they post it. Then you can't go in those specific areas. But the state parks are fine to do. Now, when it comes to the Corps of Engineers, that's your chance that you take because not everybody may know the reasoning behind why you can't go on the Corps of Engineers or why you can go on it. So you may know and be right, but right may not always be profitable. So thank you for that call in there. And that's from James from Belton. What we're going to do now is we're going to take a quick another minute break. And when we come back, we're going to go over our product, our first product demo from Centex Tactical Gear. So we'll see you on the other side in just a minute. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who has been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Bitros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. aaronsgunshop.com. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. Again, my name is Matt. I'm your host. Today is the 24th of October, and we're live still. Thank goodness, right? That'd be kind of weird if I was talking to you dead. This segment right here is our product segment, our first product segment. And, you know, I've got a very good relationship with a bunch of people. And one of those relationships is with Centex Tactical Gear. We've got Jessica and Elliot over there. They own a great place. They've got a lot of great products in their store. If you want to check them out, you can go to CentexTacticalGear.com, or you can actually go into their physical location. They're open right now, too. After the show, you can go check them out. They're on West Adams there in Temple. Go into the shop, do a zigzag pattern, look at all the good stuff they got. They got stuff coming in all the time. So if you need something there when it comes to police, fire, prepping, military, they've got all sorts of things. So check it out. But I got some of their products here. And I wanted to talk to you because it's going to segue quite nicely into our topic of interest segment. But the last thing you want to do, well, I'm going to be talking about different pouches for different calibers, different ammo pouches for different calibers. This is what I do. The last thing you want to do is have three guns in different calibers that all look the same and pick up the wrong magazine for the gun you have in your hand. So if I'm picking up, if I see a hog out in the backyard and I'm going to get my 300 blackout and it looks just like my 22 long rifle and I happen to pick up the wrong mag because I'm not paying attention, it causes problems. Okay. So my friends at Centex Tactical Gear, they've got a bunch of great surplus and new equipment. And what I did was I brought in a few different ammo patches that they have in different patterns. So let's say you got three AR rifles that all look the same, but they have different calibers. Let's say a 22 long rifle, 5.56, or 300 blackout. They all look the same, right? So this is how I identify them. I don't know if you can see this in the video. If we're streaming live, you can go to aaronsgunshop.com and check it out. I think it should be streaming live. If not, we'll have the YouTube videos up in a day or so. But I've got three different camo patterns here in front of me. And I've got two different types of ammo pouches. You can see in the video, I've got the ACU pattern, I've got the Woodland camo, and I've got the Desert. Help me out there, John. That's 1991, right? They use that in Gulf War II?
We use that in Iraq. No, I have one.
Okay. Well, we got three different patterns. One's desert, one's woodland, one's ACU. Then I've got the other pouches that are bandoliers that hold three magazines each. So what I do, since I'm an old war vet, okay, I use my woodland camo because that's what I went into the military with. I use woodland camo. This is what I'm going to use for my 5.56. So I'm going to put my 5.56 extra mag in this single pouch. Then I'm going to have three extra mags in this bandolier. So when I have my rifle leaning up against the wall and I need to take out my 5.56, I say, well, woodland camo, there it is. I pick up my extra mag. And depending on the situation, if I've got a whole herd of hogs out there and I might need some backup ammo, I'll take out my bandolier of three mags as compared to just the one. So I'm going to have one mag in the gun. I've got the one mag for backup. And if I think I'm going to be out there for a long period of time, I'm going to have three mags as well. This one's woodland camo. Another one I've got is the desert camo. And I probably put in there my 300 blackout. And I'll do the same thing. If I need the 300 blackout, just an extra mag, I use one pouch. If I need a bandolier, I've got three. So I've got them all color coordinated. And then lastly, I've got one I use for my 22 long rifle AR platform. I've got the single mag pouch, and then I've got the three mag pouch bandolier, all depending on how long I'm going to be out, how much shooting I'm going to do. But it's nice to have it handy. I don't have to worry about mix-matching my rifles and my ammo. It's a good way to color coordinate. And if this is something that you think would work for you, what I would recommend you do is go to Centex Tactical Gear and look at all the different types of stuff they have. This is all Molly gear. You can put it on your vest. Attach it to your belt. You can turn them into belt loops and just put them on your belt directly. And they've got a whole bunch of other accessories that can go with it too. So I highly recommend you go to CentexTacticalGear.com or go to their location on West Adams in Temple. They're open right now. Check them out and tell them you heard it on this radio show and buy yourself some good goodies. I think you have a lot of fun and the prices are right. So we're going to end it there. Go to CentexTacticalGear.com. Now, what's nice about what we just talked about is, and my topic of interest, I've got a guest on from Blackjack Firearms. And we got John Ferguson here. John, why don't you scoot into the camera shot here and say hello to everybody.
How you doing, Matt?
You're doing pretty good. It's glad to have you on again. John, we were talking about different calibers. I think I kind of mentioned, you either mentioned something to me first or I mentioned it to you, which made me bring on these mag pouches. But this segues into it really well. I just described how I separate my calibers so I don't mix them up. And here you are, you're going to talk about different calibers for the AR platform and all the different types of calibers you can do. And since you're the man, okay, ladies and gentlemen, you can go to bjfirearms.biz and check out his business. He's got a great place there. He does fantastic jobs on building and creating ARs and AKs and Cerakoting and all that. So whatever you want, you can check it out. And he's got contact information on his website. But right now I'm going to give it to John, and I'm going to cut in from time to time asking questions, but he's going to be talking about the different calibers that can go on the AR platform. It's a very versatile type of weapon. So go ahead, John.
All right, Matt. So we do several different calibers. The main ones that we produce for people, because it's on custom orders. When somebody says, hey, I want to go out and hunt deer in West Texas, or I want to hunt deer in Central Texas, or I want to use it for self-defense, whatever. We work on different calibers. The main ones that we've built are 5.56, 6.8 SPC, and 300 Blackout. We have worked with other calibers. But when I was researching for this segment, I looked up, and there's about 35 different calibers that people build barrels for, or bolt carrier groups, and all sorts of stuff that you can load into an AR.
Yeah, we were just at the gun show, and somebody came up with a 17.
17 Remington Magnum.
And I'm thinking, like, wow, I didn't even know they could do that, but go ahead.
Yes. So, in the rimfire cases, you got, of course, 22 long rifle. You got 17 HMR, 17 Winchester Super Magnum, and 22 Magnum. Okay. Now, I've got a 20.
They got 22 Magnum, too?
They've got 22 Magnum. Now, you're going to have to get special magazines for that.
But I'm sure you can get that, right?
I'd have to do some searching, but I'm sure if they're made, we can get them.
Okay.
I mean, we get a lot of stuff. I scratch my head sometimes at gun shows when people ask for things.
And I'm digging 22 Magnum. I really am, because I got the mini revolvers and I've got the Kel-Tec 22 Mag. I just like
right.
lightweight and it gets the job done.
Yeah, but now I've got 22 long rifle conversion kit I use myself. Back when 22 long rifle was, you know, mm-hmm. 3 cents a round. And it's just, you pull out the bolt carrier group, you slide in the new one, and then use 22 right. long rifle magazines. And it's great. I know there's people who have had to tell me they have issues with them. I've never had an issue with mine. Mine fires and everything. Now, it does foul up the weapon a lot, so you do have to clean it and you do have to oil it while you're shooting, but I've never really had issues.
Isn't that why the argument goes it's better to get a dedicated 22 because it doesn't really foul up the way the conversion fouls up?
That is one of the things that people say. Yeah. So, and then you can get an upper. Chiappa makes a nice 22 long rifle upper that's only about $100 more than the bolt carrier exchange. So, yeah, so it says you can spend $175 and get the bolt carrier group with a magazine, or you can spend about $275 and get a dedicated upper.
Not to keep cutting you off, but these thoughts keep coming into my mind. What's so cool about the ability to change the caliber is the ability to not have to think about a new type of gun that you're using.
Right. And the beauty, actually, of the 22 long rifle versus the 5.56 is out to about 25 meters. Point of aim is about the same. I've taken my scope off my 5.56 and put it onto my 22 long rifle.
Oh, wow, really?
And at 25 meters, it's hitting right on.
Fantastic.
So, yeah, and you're not really going to shoot much past 25 meters with a 22 long rifle anyway. So,
well, you can. You got great capabilities.
You do have abilities,
but you're not. I would guess that you can only shoot at certain things. That's why I have the variety that I do.
Right.
If it's small game, rabbits, snake, or coyotes, I may use my 22.
Right.
If it gets bigger than that, I go larger.
Right. Now, one thing with the 22 also, when my kids were younger, I put in the 22 conversion, and yeah, I'd come back from Iraq, and they would be like, "Hey, Dad, you know what? What's some of the stuff that you know you learned how to do with this stuff?" So I'd actually teach my kids reflexive fire and stuff with a 22 long rifle.
Yeah, that's great.
They loved it. You know, we'd set up clay pigeons down in the, out there, and the kids would sit there and practice reflexive fire with an AR on 22 long rifle.
I want to make mention too, ladies and gentlemen. I forgot to mention John is a war vet. He's done a great job. He served his country well, and we're proud to have him in here. So we just want to thank you for your service, John.
You're welcome. So moving on from the rimfire cartridges, you got the 17 Remington, which basically is a 222 Magnum case with a 17 caliber bullet put into it. And that's going to push a bullet out at about 4,400 feet per second.
Ooh, there you go. Pretty flat, right?
Oh, and it's flat shooting. And it gets good out to about 400 meters.
Now explain to somebody why, when we say it's pretty flat, why that's good.
Well, you don't have to take your sights off of your target. You can, if it's shooting flat, it's, you can keep your sights on your target the whole time.
So point of aim is point of aim.
Point of aim, right. Okay. And 17 Remington is very popular in heavy-barreled ARs for people who are going to be hunting groundhogs and things like that. And especially when you're hunting something that small, you don't really want to be aiming 3 feet above the target.
Exactly.
To, you won't even see the target. You're just, so it's nice.
We're talking trajectory of the round. So it's going so fast, it doesn't have time to drop. So you're able to just sight in what you're looking at, and the bullet should impact right at that spot. So,
all right.
Go ahead.
Now there's another one. It's called the 17x223, which basically they took a 223 case and necked it down to 17
caliber.
This
wasn't fast enough for him, was it?
Well, and I'm not really understanding that one. The 17 Remington's been out for a long time. 222 Magnum and 223 cases will both use the same magazine. So I'm really not sure with the 17x223 what you're actually picking up, other than if you want to use surplus 223 brass and neck it down yourself. I don't know.
I guess the answer is because you can.
Yeah, I guess so. So the next one is the 204 Ruger. Now, 204 Ruger takes a 20 caliber.
Is that
or
that one?
No.
Okay.
I don't have one of those here, but it takes it's a 5mm bullet, and you put it into a 222 Magnum case. And it's cooking a 20 caliber bullet out there at 4,200 feet per second.
Gosh, man.
So, and that's actually become quite popular. There's a lot of varmint hunters who are using that one now. And again, it'll use standard AR magazines.
Which is great because you got your regular AR and you just take the top off.
Yeah, you're not having to get a new bolt carrier group or anything like that.
Right.
Everything's the same. Okay, of course, then you got the standard 5.56. Okay. And with that, you got a sister cartridge to 223. Now, real quick, if you get a rifle that the barrel is marked 223, do not fire 5.56 shells through it. Dimensionally, they're almost identical. The 5.56 shell, however, puts out about 50% more PSI than the 223. So you can fire 223 ammo through a 5.56 all day long. You're not going to have problems. You start firing 5.56 through a 223, you have a chance of having a catastrophic failure of that weapon. Okay. So
now I got to ask, because I know people have been doing this.
People have been doing it for years.
And nothing that you have heard about has been that catastrophic. Is that just a major precaution?
It's a major precaution, because if I see something marked 223, I'm not going to run 556 through it. I mean, you're talking about the difference between about 54,000 PSI is the max PSI rated for the 223, and 78,000 PSI, mm-hmm. which is what the 556 is.
Now, I'm not making light of this at all, but right. what I'm getting at is there's going to be so many people who have not heard this, what you just said,
right.
and they're going to get a handful of ammo, and they're going to shoot it through their gun, and we're thinking, oh my gosh, we're going to have major problems, because you know that people are shooting that.
Oh, I'll tell you what. If you fire 556 ammo through a 223, you're probably going to be able to go a lifetime without any issues. But if anything ever happens, then that gun that's catastrophic, and that gun manufacturer is going to wipe their hands of that one, and say, yeah, you are firing stuff.
All right, so you heard it here. If you have if you're going to buy an AR, make sure it's in 5.56. This way it'll cover both ends. Go ahead.
Right, and that's the only thing we build. We don't build 223 ARs just because of that.
I don't know why they did that in the first place, but go ahead.
Okay. So now the next thing that's interesting, I've never actually seen one of these, but it's interesting, is you remember about 10 years ago, Winchester came out with those super short magnums?
Yes.
Okay. Well, the 243 and the 25 caliber Winchester super short magnums will both fit dimensionally into an AR magwell.
Well, sure. Why not do it then?
That's right. So if you want to get the barrel and you want to get a custom-built bolt carrier group, I've never seen a...
It's like I told you, everybody. John's got his business. It's like a restaurant. He's got a menu. He can pick what you want. Go ahead.
So then the next thing, and this is an interesting one, the Sharps company up in South Dakota mm-hmm. has come up with the 2545 Sharps. And they actually just came out with that this past summer. Okay. They took a 556 case and they opened it up to 25 caliber. You might ask why? Well, apparently there's 8 states in the country where you cannot use 22 caliber bullets on big game.
Gotcha.
And so
there's always a way around it.
Yeah, and so they opened, but 25 caliber is the minimum that you can use in those states.
Okay. So there's definitely an application for those right. caliber rounds. Okay.
Now, it's a 556 case. So that means you can use your 5.56 magazines, your bolt carrier group. Only thing you need is a new barrel. Okay. And Sharp's company I was checking out their webpage yesterday, and they said that they're going to be having those barrels out soon. So okay. if somebody wanted that is an option.
You know, as a note, we need to talk about in the future bolt carrier groups and how you can enter the bolt carrier group. The bolt carrier can fit many different types of
right.
bolts. So we need to talk about that in the future.
Okay. The next one is the 277 Wolverine. Again, they took a 5.56 case. They opened it up to 6.8 millimeter. So it's 27 caliber. Mm-hmm. And it's pushing that out at 2,500 feet per second.
All right. Good.
So the next one is 30 carbine. Not really sure why you'd do that. The M1 is a nice little rifle, but and again, you'd have to get that one. You're going to have to do bolts and everything else. That's more of the pistol cartridges, and we'll talk about that in a
okay.
bit.
All right.
Okay. The next one is a 30 Remington AR. Remington decided that they wanted to have a cartridge that they could put in their rifles, their R15s, and they developed the 30 Remington. And really, that's the only one that fits in. So they have special magazines that they're the only ones that are selling them. They're single stack. And
so the demand for that gun is out there for sure, but it's definitely a small group of people depending on your circumstance. So just to know, because for the lack of time we have here, if there's something out there you want, there's probably something out there you can get. And if you can get it, John can get it, and he can square you away pretty good. So, John, because we're running out of time, why don't you talk about what we got here?
Well, real quick, going on, what I brought in were some samples of the most popular cartridges. Like I said, we got the 300 Blackout, which is basically a 5.56 cartridge opened up to 30 caliber.
I like it very much.
Ballistically, you're getting a 30-30. The beauty of the 300 Blackout is you can get heavy bullets in there, up to 225 grains. And there's a company... The original one was a 300 Whisper, which is almost identical. They actually are interchangeable. 300 Whisper is the quietest center-fire rifle cartridge built. And I know I've built several of those for people who've gotten suppressors. And they tell me they have air rifles that are
louder than
those things that are going off.
I changed mine. I had a 6.8 and I changed it for the 300 just because I like the concept of how the magazines and the bolt carrier group was all the same. So
now the 6.8 is built on the 254 Roberts case, and they put a 6.8 millimeter bullet in it, and that one is that one's more for long range. If you're going to shoot 600, 700 right. yard shots, then that's it. Here in Central Texas, it's really not something we need, but I do build them for people who are hunting down in South Texas and West Texas.
That's the one reason I changed from the 6.8 to the 300, because I knew my range, what I would be shooting at, and I liked the interchangeability of the parts. Now, what can you answer real quick? What's the difference between the SPC, 6.8 SPC, and the Grendel?
The 6.8 SPC was actually designed by the U.S. Special Forces. Okay, there was a master sergeant in the Special Forces who actually designed it because he wanted something that they could use in Afghanistan that would give them the 600-yard shots, 800-yard shots, and have better terminal velocity. At the same time, Alexander Arms was developing the 6.5 Grendel, and what they wanted to do is they took a 7.62x39 case, necked it down to 6.5 millimeter, and that's what you got, the 6.5 Grendel.
Got it.
So now you can actually make 6.5 Grendels out of your own 7.62x39 brass.
Which would bring up that you can start converting your AKs to these different calibers,
right,
too, because the
mags. That was actually one of the things that they were looking at doing, was building a 6.5 millimeter AK.
Got it.
The last thing real quick, I know we're skipping a bunch of the cartridges, but you know, people talk about building pistol caliber ARs. Okay, you can do 9 millimeter, 40 cal, you can do 30 carbine, you can do 45 ACP, and 10 millimeter. There's really three different ways to go about that. There's a couple of companies that are building dedicated lowers to a specific caliber, and the magwell is designed for specific magazines. They're usually either Uzi magazines, grease gun magazines, or Glock magazines. The other option is there's companies that build an insert that goes into your AR magwell. And then that block goes in, and then you can just use.
See, I don't like that concept. I mean, you're working on a gun for me right now.
Right.
And the whole reason I wanted the dedicated lower part of it was because I didn't want the block that goes in the magwell, because it's just one other part that it's got moving parts and it causes me problems. That's my personal opinion.
Right. The other problem with those is every one of those I've ever seen.
We're talking about the block?
Yeah, everyone I've ever seen with the block in it. You have to change out your hammer. They require a different hammer. I'm not exactly sure why, but you always have to buy the hammer and change it out.
Okay, so one other problem with that situation, all right?
So the last thing, the other thing is, the last option is Olympic Arms builds this neat little upper. And it just snaps right on. There's no change out of any of the hammer. It uses a standard hammer. You don't put a block in, but you have to use their proprietary magazines.
Okay.
But that's the simplest way to actually have a multi-caliber rifle. Now,
that's with the blocks. This way you don't have to.
You don't have a block on it. There's no block on the Olympic Arms. The magazines are straight mags. They're the same dimensions, outside dimensions, as a 5.56 mag.
Gotcha. Okay.
But they hold pistol cartridges.
Pistol cartridges. That would sound like the best way to go, like you just said, because you don't have to jack with your.
Yeah, that's one I always suggest people get if they're going to do that. The benefit to that one also is, like I said, you don't have to change out the hammer or anything. And, you know, you're not messing with your lower. So now anytime you're messing with the pistol cartridges, one thing to remember is they're not gas operated. These things are all going to be blowback.
Blowback, right.
And so, you know, the recoil operates, so you're not going to get the fouling coming back from the gas of a direct gas impingement. You don't have to have the weight of a piston on over your barrel.
That's
There's
right.
lots of benefits to it.
It's cheaper to shoot, too.
Yeah, it's cheaper to shoot. 9mm ammo is, you know, you can get 50 rounds of 9mm for the box of, or for the price of 20 rounds of 5.56.
All right, well, John, look, this is awesome information for anybody who's interested in building an AR platform with multiple calibers or adding to what they already have. If they have an AR, they can add to it as compared to building it from the ground up. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm having him work on something for me now. I'm excited about it. You can do the same thing by going to bjfirearms.biz, checking out his website, give him a call, ask him to help you out. John, you got anything you want to say before we wrap it up?
The AR is a fun rifle, and there's tons of accessories, tons of options out there. You can personalize this thing to yourself or to any need that you might have for it.
And he's a multi-star restaurant, excellent, has many things on the menu. Go ahead and open up his menu, look at all the AR parts, types of guns that he has to offer. Give him a call, check him out. That's bjfirearms.biz. John, I want to thank you very much. I'm going to move on to the final segment of the program. And ladies and gentlemen, if you have any questions, just give him a contact him on bjfirearms.biz. Okay, I'm going to move in real quick. I've got a Whiskey Tango Foxtrot moment that I've got enough time to do. And this is old date, but it's still good, even though it's an old date. This is from October 8th of this year. And it's an article from the Associated Press by Jill Colvin. And it's concerning Ben Carson. So it's concerning Ben Carson and the shooting that happened up in Oregon. So let me read this article to you. Ben Carson's call for those caught in mass shootings to rush at the attacker is drawing criticism from public safety experts and little support Wednesday from his presidential rivals. Speaking days after an Oregon Community College shooting left 10 dead, the Republican presidential candidate and retired neurosurgeon offered advice to potential victims of future attacks. Quote, "I want to plant in people's minds what to do in a situation like this, because unfortunately this is probably not going to be the last time this happens," he told CBS earlier. He told CBS earlier, Carson had said if he had been present at the Oregon attack, he would not just have stood there and let them shoot him. "I would say, hey, guys, everybody attack him. He may shoot me, but he can't get us all." All right, so let's move on a little further. We're not at the WTF yet. "Rushing the shooter would only be used as a last resort," advised public safety experts, including the FBI. Carson's presidential rivals either didn't respond to his comments or dismissed them. Here's a quote. "I think Mr. Carson has no idea what he would do," close quote. In a mass shooting, said South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham. Yeah, we all know about him. In an interview on CNN, quote, "That's not what we need to be saying as leaders of this country," he said. "You have no idea what you would do." Ladies and gentlemen, here's the WTF moment. No idea? I mean, what? That's why we train. Why do you think we train so much? The more training you do, the more second nature it becomes. If you train that, hey, if something goes down, here's what I'm going to do. When that something goes down, guess what? You're most likely going to do what you trained to do. Let's move on in this article. Carson's guidance to attack the shooter is consistent with what federal government has recommended for responding to a situation with a gunman on the loose, but only if other avenues fail, said John Cohen, a Rutgers University professor who led the Department of Homeland Security's programs on how to respond to these situations. Ladies and gentlemen, I'll tell you what, I'm not too impressed with these people in these major departments. When they have these long titles and you go to listen to what they say and see what they do, I'm thinking, how the heck did you get in that position? Anyway, here's the other WTF. "The program advises people to run, hide, fight," Cohen said. "As a last resort, fight for survival." So let's think about it. Here you are, you're at the college. This guy's shooting people up. They want you to run and not help your fellow man. They want you to hide and not help your fellow man. And then if you're hiding, cowering in the corner and they come after you, then they say it's okay to attack. Then they say to find some type of weapons to take down the intruder. Ladies and gentlemen, screw that, okay? Where's your compassion? Where's your honor? Something's going down like that. Train. Get yourself trained. If you're going to carry a gun, know how to use it. Get your mind prepared. Get your hands prepared. Get your body prepared. Make sure you know how to use your weapon. Make sure you know how to shoot it accurately. By knowing what you know and practicing that in application, it allows you many more options, because if you're more confident with your firearm and the way you're going to handle yourself, it opens up the doors of possibilities for things for you to do. You can maybe talk the person down. You can maybe hit them with something else besides shooting. But worst case scenario, if you have to, you've got the capability of doing it. I'm not going to let my fellow man get shot and then watch the next one get shot because they tell me I should run away and hide. And the other thing is, I'm gonna make weapons out of something in the room. Why not give me the right, or why not allow me without any hassles to carry my firearm and be able to utilize it if necessary? So that's this week's What the F situation. Prepare, practice, train, give me a call, sign up for a class, and we'll get you squared away. Paul, how much time I got? 1 minute? Okay, well, 1 minute with that. Here's what we're going to do. I'm going to tell you I enjoy it every time I'm on the air with you guys. I enjoyed the calls coming in. I look forward to talking to you next week. Don't forget, we got the class at 2:30 today. I'm going to be heading right out to go there. And I believe the next class we're going to have, I lost track. Check on the website, aaronsgunshop.com. I think it's going to be early November. That'll be a Saturday again. And we'll get you signed up for that, but I'll be posting it on the website. Until that time, keep your powder dry and God bless.
Radio 1400 KTEM. KTEM. Serving.